I'm Marco Werman, and this is The World. We're a co-production of the BBC World Service, PRI, and WGBH here in Boston. We began today looking at the wildfires in California and how that's part of the new normal or abnormal all over the globe. If it seems we're stepping back from other news more and more to look at disasters in nature, you're right, because this is both breaking news right now and a big long-term story about our planet. Today, we're taking on a corner of the planet that we rarely visit, the Arctic, and the ways that climate change is transforming that region, something we've been doing every Monday the past few weeks. Amy Martin has been our guide for these journeys. Hi, Amy.
Hey, Marco.
So you're the host and creator of the Threshold podcast, and this season the podcast is all about the Arctic, and we've been bringing some of your stories, your team stories, to the world. What I've been really appreciating, Amy, is the way you're taking on this massive subject through a few personal stories.
Yeah, I feel like with something as huge as the Arctic and as huge as climate change, it really makes sense to just start really small and get to know individual people and their own personal experiences as kind of a window into the bigger topics.
Yeah, it is a massive topic, also an ominous topic. I remember, though, your comment in one of your stories a couple of weeks ago, who knew that reporting on climate change could be so much fun? Where'd you find the fun?
You know, that was one of the things that was really interesting about reporting this season of our show is that it actually was mostly fun. And I think it's just because the Arctic is this beautiful region and it's full of really interesting people. So often I was just having a really good time out exploring and having these really in-depth, fascinating conversations, even though the content of what I was learning was often very sobering. So yeah, I mean, I had fun almost everywhere. I almost started to feel guilty about it, like it shouldn't be so much fun to be doing this.
Yeah, and by the way, if you missed any of Amy's previous stories, you can find them at theworld.org/thebigmelt. Amy, you've touched down so far in Iceland, Sweden, Norway, and Alaska, and today you're taking us back to northern Alaska for a story about sea ice. As an outsider, Amy, what for you was kind of like the big snapshot after you saw how these communities are experiencing and being affected by climate change?
Well, one thing is that climate change has been affecting people's lives on the North Slope of Alaska for decades. It's not a new story there at all. It's impacting everything. It's impacting how people hunt. It's impacting how they store their food. It's impacting their future as a community. And that people are just really trying their best to adapt. You know, there's determination to make life work with all of these changes.
Amy Martin, host and producer of the Threshold podcast. Thanks.
Thank you.
And let's check out your story now from northern Alaska.
David Levitt has spent a lifetime watching ice.
Long time ago, that good ice all the time. Really not good ice anymore. Yeah, ice in, it's not good anymore.
David is 88, and he lives in Utqiagvik, Alaska. It's the northernmost city in the U.S. on the Arctic Ocean. He grew up in this region, hunting with his family and living a semi-nomadic life. He's Inupiat, one of the indigenous groups of the North American Arctic, and sea ice is a big part of Inupiat life. When he was a child, David says, the ocean would freeze in October, but now sometimes it's not even frozen in December. The ice lasted longer back then, too. David says it often wouldn't melt until July. His eyes light up as he remembers taking the dog sled to summer celebrations in Utqiagvik.
Come up here with the dog team on July. Come up here for the 4th of July with the dog team. No, not anymore. You know that ice is not good anymore.
It's not good anymore because the earth is warming up fast, and it's warming fastest here in the Arctic. This community has been watching that happen for decades.
It was a gradual change, and then it accelerated.
This is Gordon Brower. He also lives in Utqiagvik. And like David, he remembers when it was normal for the sea ice to stick around well into the summer and build up from year to year.
In the 70s, you had multi-year ice all the way up to maybe 1980s. And to me, that's a vivid memory because that's when I was very active as a young person. And then from the 80s to the 90s, another era of change in the ice, and then from the 90s to today, a much more accelerated pace because the retreat is so extensive. You would see probably retreats in the 70s maybe 15-20 miles. But today you're looking at retreat of ice for hundreds of miles.
Gordon remembers this so clearly because he spent a lot of time living on the ice, learning how to hunt whales.
And I know it's not a very big thing to talk about downstate, about catching whales and killing them, but we have been doing that for thousands of years to survive. That's the only way we could have survived here.
Whales have always been a crucial food source in this harsh and isolated environment. And even today, food that's shipped into grocery stores can be wildly expensive. So the ability to hunt really matters here. That's why indigenous communities in Utqiagvik and across the Arctic fought hard for the right to keep their subsistence whale hunt when most commercial whaling was banned a few decades ago. Gordon says they use every part of the whale, and they share the food throughout the community. To be part of a crew providing this food was, and is, a major source of pride.
The whale brings on a festival of its own, and everybody gets new garments and clothing, and sometimes people get married, and other things happen, and it feels good because a whale means so much, because there's the widows, there's the ill, there's the children, there's the ability to make food manageable for a large community. It makes me feel good that I'm doing a service for my community.
The whales hunted here are mostly bowheads, which can grow up to 60 feet long and weigh 100 tons. Gordon learned how to hunt whales as a child, and he says a big part of that education involved learning about sea ice.
Our camps were sometimes 15 miles out offshore. We would live offshore for up to a month trying to harvest these marine mammals.
They'd bring food and shelter, but they didn't need to bring fresh water because they could get that from the ice itself. As sea ice gets older, it squeezes the salt out. So if you have ice that's 5 or 10 years old, you can melt it and drink it.
You don't see that anymore, and now you got to bring your own water from shore to your camp offshore because you're not seeing these glaciated type ice that develop over long periods of time that are salt-free.
And that's not the only change out on the ice.
It's considerably, I think, more dangerous. It's not as, you're not as sure-footed on the ice anymore.
In many communities up here, more people are falling through the ice now when they're whaling or traveling, especially on snowmobiles. Loss of sea ice affects all kinds of animals, too. There are the polar bears, of course, but also narwhals, walruses, seals, even birds. They're all being affected as the sea ice recedes. And people much farther away are watching.
The health of the ice cover is not very good.
This is Mark Serez, the director of the National Snow and Ice Data Center in Colorado.
Since the dawn of the modern satellite record, 1979, it's decreasing in all months. In September especially, September is the end of the melt season in the Arctic, and that's when the biggest trends have been occurring, something like 13% per decade. It's tremendous.
Sea ice grows in the winter when the Arctic is very cold and dark, and then dies back every summer. But for all of human history, there's always been some Arctic sea ice that doesn't melt in the summer. That's the thick multi-year ice that Gordon Brower talked about. And like Gordon, Mark says there's much less of it now.
Basically, it's getting so warm now that it's hard to form all this really old, thick, multi-year ice. And some of that old, thick, multi-year ice just melts away, but we really can't regenerate it anymore.
So the sea ice is getting both thinner and covering a smaller area. And that's a really big deal, because one of the most important things polar ice does for all of us is reflect sunlight and heat back into space. Scientists call this albedo. It's how reflective something is. Sea ice in the Arctic has always been a giant reflective shield, bouncing heat away from the planet.
Well, if we think about what sea ice is, it's one of the higher albedo surfaces of our planet.
But as sea ice starts to melt, the Arctic reflects less solar energy and absorbs more of it, which leads to a scary feedback loop. Less sea ice means more of the Arctic is mostly dark ocean. That absorbs more heat, which leads to more ice loss, etc. This is one of the reasons why the Arctic is warming up so fast. And there's more to the story of what's changing as Arctic sea ice disappears. The ice helps keep the Arctic cold, and the difference between the cold Arctic and the warmer temperate zones is part of what drives weather systems around the Northern Hemisphere. As the Arctic warms, some scientists think it's knocking those weather systems out of whack. We've still got a lot to learn about all of these processes and other impacts of sea ice loss, but there's one bottom line. Arctic sea ice has helped keep the Earth's climate running in a more or less predictable way for thousands of years. And as we warm up the planet, we're making it harder for the ice to do that work for us.
Our lives depend on the ice, the cold, and the snow.
This is Sheila Watt-Cloutier. She's the former head of the International Inuit Circumpolar Council, which advocates for Inuit people across the North. She's talking about Arctic people, but she could be talking about all of us. It's just that the people who live here see it and experience it way more directly.
And many of our elders have been saying, we are teaching you the traditional knowledge that we have been taught over millennia about safety, about the conditions of what is out there on that ice and snow. But they say there's a disclaimer now as a result of climate change, where many of our elders have said, this is what I'm teaching you. However, and that's the disclaimer here, the rules are changing.
Sheila is from Eastern Canada, thousands of miles from Utqiagvik, but she says the changes in the Arctic affect all of the 150,000 Inuit people who live here, from eastern Russia all the way over to Greenland.
It isn't just the ice and the polar bear that we would be losing, but all of the wisdom would go with that ice as well. And that's the fear that we have, is that our culture is so connected to everything that is around us, including the ice. And the ice, of course, is our life force. And as that starts to go, it minimizes our ability to live as Inuit as we've known it for millennia.
I'm back in Utqiagvik watching a performance of traditional Inupiaq dancing and drumming. The movements are all about hunting. They mimic the paddling of the skin boats on the waves and the careful leaps from one ice floe to another. And they evoke the tight bond in this hunting culture between the hunters and the animals. But even as they've continued their subsistence hunting, the people in Utqiagvik have also become part of the cash economy. They need whales, but they also need textbooks and computers. And in this part of Alaska, a lot of that cash comes from just one source.
We don't have any other horse to ride up here. The Arctic is an oil and gas province.
That's Gordon Brower again. 50 years ago, one of the largest oil fields in North America was discovered east of here in Prudhoe Bay. Gordon says local people knew that would mean big changes here, so they worked to forge agreements that would help preserve their culture while using the income from fossil fuel development to fund schools, hospitals, roads, and more.
We needed to do something so we were not completely overtaken and assimilated, but to find a way to balance and coexist.
Since then, natural gas and coal have also been found in the region. The money earned from taking all of that stuff out of the ground has transformed life up here, but it's come at a cost, because those are the same fossil fuels that are causing the climate to warm up and the ice to melt away.
If you're thinking about, am I contradicting myself in trying to balance oil and gas development with what's going on today with the ice extent retreat, the permafrost issues that we're having, I don't know, but I know we're going to adapt, and we still got to preserve the whale and do our best to preserve it and feed people.
The dilemma that Utqiagvik is in is the same one we're all facing. We're all drinking from the same oil well, even as it slowly disrupts everything around us. I traveled around the Arctic on planes that run on fossil fuel, and I'm recording this in a studio heated by them. The electricity that runs the device you're listening to right now was probably also made by burning fossil fuel. Oil, gas, and coal are woven into the fabric of our lives, but the pollution from those fuels threatens all of us. Some of that damage is already baked in, but we know enough to be able to limit it, around the globe and here in the Arctic. The first step, says Mark Serez, is facing facts.
We understand the basic science here. We have got this nailed down. Climate change is real, and it is us.
For The World, I'm Amy Martin, Utqiagvik, Alaska.
Amy had reporting help from Nick Mott. Her stories about climate change in the Arctic come through our partnership with the Threshold podcast and radio program, with funding support from the Pulitzer Center. You can check out all the stories at theworld.org/thebigmelt. You can also find the whole season of the Threshold podcast at iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.